I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, and it is a beautiful day. It's July 30th, 2013, and I'm feeling really good. How about you? I just got a beautiful gift that I wasn't expecting. It's not even my birthday. It's just a beautiful day. And Gary Knoll just gave me a copy of his new cookbook, Anti-Arthritis, Anti-Inflammation Cookbook, Healing Through Natural Foods, over 270 delicious vegan, vegetarian, and raw food recipes. And it's gorgeous. It's stunning. And what one thing that I really love about cookbooks, the ones that I really love, I'm going to say, are the ones that are filled with beautiful pictures. I think every recipe has a picture. It's really stunning. And one thing he pointed out to me, which I want to point out to you, is that this book is printed on recycled paper with vegetable-based inks, and they are planting more trees than were required to print this publication. So very exciting, gorgeous book. It's heavy, and now I have to bring it home, but I'm not complaining. Okay, and the other thing I wanted to mention, I mentioned this last week, and now I'm really mentioning it because the Swingin' Gourmets, my vegan musical cabaret act, now has its first food show. It's sort of a food show documentary video. It is live online. Please go to swinginggourmets.com and watch it. It's 28 minutes, so this is like television. This isn't one of these quick soundbite things. This is sit back, relax, sip your green juice, and watch. It's fun. And then when you've finished your assignment, let me know what you think, okay? info@realmeals.org. That's where you find me. Very good. You got that? I'll remind you later because it's really important that you watch this. All right, now, moving on to my first guest who is joining me here in the studio. Ellen Zakos leads foraging walks and currently teaches at the New York Botanical Garden, where she received her certification in commercial horticulture and ethnobotany. She writes two blogs, which can be found at downanddirtygardening.com and Garden Bites, and that's with a Y-B-Y-T-E-S, gardenbites.com, and has written numerous gardening books and contributed to publications including Horticulture and Better Homes and Gardens. And I'm looking at her beautiful new book, which I got when I was at the Book Expo several months ago here in New York at the Javits Center, Backyard Foraging, 65 Familiar Plants You Didn't Know You Could Eat. Okay, welcome to It's All About Food, Ellen.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, this is a really beautiful book. And just like I was saying about Gary Knoll's cookbook, this is also filled with beautiful pictures good enough to eat. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes me want to lick the pages.
I hope it makes you want to go out and forage for the foods and then lick them.
Right. Well, the thing that I think is so important is I think we've lost a lot of our either instinctual knowledge or ancestral knowledge or some kind of knowledge that used to be useful to us, and that was what we could go outside and find to eat. Foraging. You know, we talk about humans being hunter-gatherers. Well, I believe we were foragers before we were hunter-gatherers.
Well, I think foraging is gathering. I mean, I think it's
right.
The same thing. I think it's they're synonyms for each other, and I absolutely agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, today, not only do most people not know where their kitchen is, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to make food, and they barely know how to buy it, and they don't know most of the vegetables and fruits that are in the produce section, they certainly don't know what's out there growing wild.
Yeah.
That's edible.
Yeah, and you know, just a few generations ago, that was not the case.
How fast it happened.
And I was talking, I was hiking with some friends that over the weekend, and some foraging friends, and we were talking about, I don't know why we were talking about this, but we were talking about how growing up we were all fed from cans.
Right.
And, you know, I love my parents, and my mom is a good cook, but they thought it was perfectly acceptable to open a can of wax beans and serve that to us for dinner.
Spinach.
They were
spinach.
Awful. Yeah. But it was, I think, a sign of prosperity or something. You know, my grandparents were immigrants. From Greece, and the fact that, and I know my grandmother knew how to forage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how they fed themselves. But then, you know, the next generation was here, and they didn't have to do that. And it was like, yeah, we can just buy cans of food. We have arrived.
Yeah, well, and there was a novelty to it, too.
Yeah. And it was, I think, not a step in the right direction.
No, and definitely not. So I don't know if we'll ever get back. But one of the things I loved about this book is there are just so many foods out there. We don't even know about them.
Yeah.
Our selection of foods has been so filtered down into just a handful based on whatever Big Ag wants to grow.
Yeah, what they can sell, what they can ship, what they can grow least expensively.
Yeah.
That's what we're
fed. Which
is
really unfortunate. So let's just jump in. Okay, we're gonna jump in and get to know some of these wonderful foods for a minute. Now, even before we do, you put some warnings or disclaimers or things we need to know about.
I really just wanted to say at the beginning, don't be stupid.
Don't be stupid.
And if you are, don't blame me. But of course, you can't say that. You know, it can be a little more polite.
Well, the things that we don't want to do is we don't want to grab things that neighborhood animals, dogs, and others have peed on recently.
For example, that's a very, very good, very good idea. Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to go off on another subject, but about 10 years ago, I was curious about dumpster diving, and I went on a few dumpster dives with some people that were doing that. And in Manhattan, it's kind of crazy because there's so much really excellent food that is fresh and clean and packaged and put on the streets for lots of strange reasons. But we were in a 2020 piece on television, and they edited in this little dog peeing on a pile of trash. That little dog was not there when we were there. I'll never forget it.
But it made for good television.
Yeah, it sure did.
Yeah.
But we must think about those little dogs and other animals.
Yeah, you must think about those. And you must think about, you know, insecticides and herbicides if you're foraging in a park or a field. And you must think about what belongs to you and what belongs to the neighbor on the other side of the fence. And, you know, always ask permission if you're foraging someplace that's not your land, and don't forage near a busy highway. You know, think they're all common sense things. If you stop and you think about it, they all make sense, these rules.
Right. So that leaves what?
It leaves a lot. It leaves a lot. I mean, the thing about this book that is, to me, so interesting is you really can start in your own backyard, because there's a lot of stuff that I don't know if you have a yard or...
No, living in Queens. I have a terrace.
Okay. All right.
But I can even forage on my terrace.
Yes.
Because
you...
I've got lamb's quarters that just appears out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. You can. You can forage almost anywhere. You can forage in Central Park. You can forage in Prospect Park. Don't let the Rangers catch you. but seriously, a lot of the stuff that's in the park that's forageable are the most invasive, exotic plants there. So really, the Rangers should be thanking you instead of writing you a ticket when you're pulling out the Japanese knotweed, because it's crowding out a lot of stuff that should be there. But in a lot of parks, they have to post when they spray, so you know not to forage there. And outside of New York City, many national and state parks actually allow you to forage. You can take a certain quantity of berries or nuts per day, as long as you're not doing it for commercial purposes. You can't pull plants up by the roots, but you don't really always want to do that anyway.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking it would be really good if we could learn as children more about this, because certainly we don't want children picking foods that are poisonous, that they shouldn't be eating. But also, like I mentioned before, we've lost all this knowledge, and we really need to get it back.
Yeah.
And I'm not, there's this in the back of my mind, if a crisis happens and we don't have any more food in our stores, what are we going to eat? And those who know how to forage are going to have a little bit of an advantage.
We're going to eat each other is what I'm afraid of. But no, you're right.
Soil
is
green.
People. my sisters always say that come the apocalypse, they're coming to my house. Because not only do I have a well-stocked pantry, because I do a lot of food preservation, that's kind of my hobby, but also I know what you can eat out there. Now, that doesn't mean I could actually, you know, survive for long if society imploded. But I love driving down the road and thinking, I could eat that, I could eat that, I could eat that.
Mm. Now, where did you learn this?
I learned it here. I did not learn it growing up. I'm a gardener by profession. And my wild foods, my foraging mentor is a woman named Leda Meredith, who lives in Brooklyn. And she worked for me as a gardener when I started my company. And we were sitting around having lunch one day, somebody's property, and I had almost nothing in the refrigerator that morning. So I think I had a cheese sandwich, and it was very boring. And she picked a couple of garlic mustard leaves and stuck them in my sandwich. And made all the difference in the world. And it was free, and it was delicious, and I was hooked.
That's crazy. Yeah. It's just amazing. So many different flavors. Some of them our tongues wouldn't even know what to do with because they'd be so unfamiliar to us.
Yeah, but really good, a lot of them. Really, if it weren't delicious, I would not be interested.
Right. So I'm looking at the ox-eye daisy. Now, I'm a particular fan of leafy green vegetables. And I know that there's a lot out there that I haven't tried. That's page 60.
Yes.
And it's looking rather tasty.
It is. It's one of the, it is very tasty. It is very tasty because it's got a little bit of lemoniness, a little bit of pepperiness to the taste.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing
that's already seasoned.
It is. It's pre-seasoned salad. And the thing that's nice about it is it's also got some succulents to the leaf. It's a little bit thicker than a lettuce leaf, but it's not super, super thick. So it's got good mouthfeel in addition to sort of some internal spicing.
Now, speaking of all of that, one that I don't like, and I think I saw it here, yes, purslane. Don't like purslane, and it's got that a mouthfeel that I think is very unpleasant.
Are you referring to the mucilaginous quality of purslane? Okay, I will give you that. Purslane is like okra on steroids as far as mucilage.
But it's good for
concerned.
You.
It's really super good for you. And there's a way you can, I mean, I don't know how many millions of ways you've tried it, but if you cook it in a certain way, the way Greeks cook it is sort of saute in olive oil with garlic and then with stewed tomatoes, cook for a long time, and then, of course, they put in some feta cheese because every good Greek puts feta cheese in everything. And it's delicious. And when you cook it long and slow and with the tomato sauce, the stewed tomatoes, the mucilage just
goes away.
Okay. And it's super, super healthy.
All right. I will give purslane
a second chance. Oh, good.
Okay. Another one that I found really fascinating is the ostrich fern on page 56.
Yeah. I love fiddlehead ferns.
I mean, it's very weird looking, strange looking, and yet it's kind of a string bean asparagus. Sort of thing.
Yeah, only it's got a little more density to it. So it's not, I mean, you really bite into it. It's got a little more heft to it as a vegetable. Now, I will say that you have to know the right fern. There are some ferns that are bitter and really unpleasant. And that's why you see that big picture on page 57 there? That shows you what the fern fiddlehead looks like. Other fiddlehead ferns have like really fuzzy coverings and just don't look like this at all. You really want to make sure you get the ostrich fern. That's the most delicious one.
Well, I'm not going to have them unless you're with me and you can pick.
Okay. All right. It's a good way to start, but you know, you're joking, but that's how you start.
Yeah, I would never discover something and say, oh, that looks like page 69 in Ellen's book.
Except purslane, you already know, so you could do that yourself.
Well, I discovered purslane when I belonged to a community-supported agriculture group, which I don't at the moment, and I encourage people to do that.
I do, yeah.
It may or may not fit your lifestyle because you have to pick up the produce box every week at a certain time, and if you're not going to be around for a month or two, it's not as good as a deal, but you do, depending on the farmer, you might get to learn about new foods, and that's what's exciting about it. Some people may find it annoying, but when you're getting a surprise every week in a box, that's really fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, another thing that surprised me was the spruce. I didn't know you could eat that.
Yeah. And it's not just that you can eat it. It's fantastic.
I didn't know that.
It's fantastic. And it can be either sweet or savory.
I mean, how would you eat it? It doesn't... Who ever thought of biting into that?
Well, you don't... Yeah, see, I don't know. I don't know who thought of it the first time. I wish I could say, oh, that was my... Oh, Karen, that was my idea. I was the one who thought of it.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't. The spruce... The thing that I made this year that I loved most was a spruce tip shortbread cookie.
Okay.
And it just, you just grind it up in the food processor with whatever sweetener you're using, if it's a sugar or a brown sugar, or you would just chop it up really small if you were going to do it with a, you know, an agave nectar or something else. But for a shortbread, you use real sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's delicious that way, but it's also great in savory dishes. You can do it in food processor with salt and then use that salt on roasted root vegetables.
Mm.
And you think, well, how's that going to taste? It actually has kind of almost a citrusy taste to it when
wow.
it's cooked, which is not what you'd expect, but it's delicious.
I guess I'm thinking about rosemary, which is a kind of a...
It's not dissimilar.
Tippy, mm-hmm. spiny sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that I'm going to have to find or try somewhere.
In the spring.
But look-alike to avoid are
yeah.
the use.
Yeah.
Use are bad.
Use are poison.
Use, that's Y-E-W-S. It doesn't matter how
not
you spell
guys.
It.
Yeah.
You just want to not eat it.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the scary part of this.
Well, that's why you never eat anything you're not 100% sure of. That is really the first rule. We said the first rule was dog pee, but it's not. The first rule is never eat anything you're not 100%
you know,
positive
dog
of.
Dog pee may not be actually that bad.
It's probably not as bad for you as you is.
Now, we know... We, those who listen to my show and myself, people who love healthy food, that berries are really important and probably the best fruits out there. And you talk about a number of them here, and I think most of them that when you describe them tend to be tart.
Yes, most of them are tart.
And that's the secret, because we've hybridized so many fruits and so many berries to be less tart and sweet for our unsophisticated palates. And the tarter ones are probably the healthier ones.
I don't know why that is, though. Do you? You probably know more about that chemistry than I do. I know how the tartness is useful to me as a cook because it's an indication of greater amounts of pectin, often.
Mm.
And also, you know, some of the plant chemicals that evolved to sort of keep animals from eating. Although with berries, you want the animals to eat so they can then, shall we say, disperse
the seed.
Well, I was going for, you know, the word disperse, but go ahead, say poop if that makes you happy.
I like the word poop.
Okay.
Okay.
But yes, they are mostly very tart fruits, you know, which are delicious. Delicious, if you know
right.
what to do with them.
I'm looking at the Juneberry.
Which is actually not that tart. It's just straight off the tree. You can eat that and be very, very happy.
Juniper?
Yeah.
And we can eat... For some reason, I thought juniper was not to be eaten.
No. First of all, I don't know what your views on alcohol are.
Occasionally.
But gin is flavored with juniper.
Juniper. Oh,
and sauerkraut is flavored with juniper.
That's right.
So,
but that's where I read it. You can't have too many of them, I read.
I would love to...
I know
that
can't
because
I have too many of them. Yeah.
I don't know. I use it in a dry rub.
Mm-hmm.
They're very strong tasting, so you don't need a lot of them. You could use 6 or 7 berries to flavor an entire quart of sauerkraut. You really don't need a lot.
Right.
But you know, this is something that you can now buy at Sahadi or in a good spice store is the juniper berries. And I love to crush up a few and mix them with other things as a dry rub.
Okay. Now, what about flowers?
Mm.
Eating flowers.
Occasionally
I eat at this one Thai restaurant and they always have this
Dendrobium orchid on the plate.
Yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't eat those if I were you. Not because the Dendrobium orchid isn't safe, but because you don't know what's been sprayed on the Dendrobium orchid while it was growing. If you know, they are edible. And if you were growing it and not spraying anything on it, but
right.
do you know if the Thai restaurant is going down to the florist on the... I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know that.
But in general, flowers, to me, are not the most interesting things to eat just because they're so ephemeral. They're so... You know, they don't really feed me. I'm an enthusiastic eater. I like a little more substance.
Right.
But I wouldn't
make a main course out of it, but it's they have some really lovely, delicate flavors.
And there are some that I'm quite fond of, like yucca flowers, which are in bloom right now, have a great, crisp, cool taste to them. And if you're, like, on the West Coast, pineapple guava flowers have almost a cinnamony taste to them, and those are two that I really do like.
Oregon grape looks beautiful.
Yeah, and that's one that'll pucker you right up.
oh, Oh, gosh, these are all so, so beautiful. Okay, now we're here in New York City, mm-hmm. so what's going on in Central Park?
Well, first I have to say, it's against the rules.
To forage.
To forage.
Yeah,
in
I remember Wild Man Steve yeah. Brill talking about his excursions and arrests mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. being ultimately allowed to give tours.
Yeah. It is technically against the rules to forage in Central Park. Although I think if you were, you know, picking up stuff on the ground, if they were nuts, like every fall, let's say from mid-September up until Thanksgiving, under every female ginkgo tree, you will see crowds of mostly Asian women, but I'm there too, picking nuts up off the ground. And nobody's going to stop you from mm-hmm. from doing that because they're just lying there on the ground. But technically, you are not supposed to pick anything in Central Park. So when I or anybody else lead a foraging tour in the park, we are mostly just saying, see this? If you find it someplace else, you can pick it and eat it, and this is what you can do with it. And I think... Honestly, I think that's mostly for liability reasons. I don't think the city wants to be sued by somebody who picks a plant and, you know, then gets sick because they weren't paying attention. And they
too many lawyers in New York.
It's a litigious society, and that doesn't always help us.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking about animal law in the next section, so in the next part of this show. And it has its advantages, but okay, we'll just move on. Mushrooms.
Yeah.
Now, mushrooms, I'm a big mushroom lover, and we're learning more and more about how nutritious mushrooms are. Sometimes I call them natural chemotherapy because of their phenomenal anti-cancer fighting properties.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it could be deadly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I only put five mushrooms in here, and the five I chose are mushrooms that have no poisonous lookalikes.
Good.
And
okay.
I thought that was very important for people who are just starting out. Now, I'm very fortunate in that, like, one of the best mushroom people in the entire world, Gary Linkoff, is a colleague of mine up at the Botanical Garden. Mm. So I started out studying with him, and he's also a big forager. So it's great if you can learn from someone, because there's nothing like touching the actual mushroom.
Right. Somebody who's been doing it a long time and is alive.
And is still alive. It's a good sign. But the five that are in here are absolutely foolproof. If you find something that looks like one of these pictures, you are not going to die. Unless you have an allergic reaction, but you could have an allergic reaction to a peanut or a strawberry. So.
Right. Wow. Oyster mushrooms.
Yeah. Nothing looks like an oyster mushroom. If you really read the description, if you look at how the oyster mushroom comes out of the wood, it always grows on wood.
Mm.
And, you know, but you have to really read the descriptions. You have to, it's not just, you know, you can't just say, oh, look, that's white. Maybe it's an oyster mushroom. You have to really turn it over and look at it and take a spore print and see how it attaches to the wood.
Okay.
If that sounds like too much work, just go to the store and buy your mushrooms.
Well, I would love to do this, you know, just like anybody. I don't know where I'm going to find the time.
Well, that's the great thing about, you know, if you're walking to work, if you're walking through the park, you might see four or five things just on your way into work that you could eat.
Yeah, I always see dandelion.
Yeah.
And I often see lamb's quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that somehow it just grows in my pots on my terrace.
Yeah, well, it seeds itself so readily. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's a lot of others out there. And my understanding of dandelion was the Europeans brought it over because they liked to eat it. And then it became a weed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we don't know any better.
Because we are too stupid to try it. But it's delicious. And you can eat the leaves, and you can eat the flowers, and you can eat the roots. So it's really a superstar as far as I'm concerned.
And good for us.
Yeah.
Okay, so now what do you do with all these things? You've got some nice little tips at the end of the book
mm-hmm.
on preserving advice.
Yeah, because, you know, when something... You always want to eat something when it's at its peak, and usually that means you get a lot of it all at once, and what are you going to do with it? Like right now, blueberries, gallons every weekend I'm picking.
Where?
Out in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's, you know, so what are you going to do? You can't... You can have blueberry pancakes, and you can just eat them fresh, but you have to preserve them. So
right.
You learn how to freeze and can and dry and do all these things so that you can enjoy the harvest throughout the year.
Mm. Well, one thing I discovered not too long ago was... making a jam or a jelly, just something really simple from dried fruit, and it's a no-brainer. I take the dried fruit, like a dried apricot, for example, or anything dried. I add some water to it. I cook it until it's soft. I puree it, and I put it in jars. And there's nothing. That's it.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining this would be terrific.
You could do the same thing.
Dehydrated, and then when I was ready, I could make some jam.
Yeah.
Or I could just make jam right off the bat.
Well, you could do that, too. You could do that, too. Well, and the nice thing about jam is you don't have to use artificial pectin because you just keep cooking it until it thickens to be where you want it to be.
Right. Now, I've made some raw pies from time to time, and I've used blueberries because when I blend a blueberry, it naturally firms up because of the pectin in it. But that doesn't happen with strawberries or raspberries. So are there other berries that have that much pectin in them?
Yes, there are. It's fruit very widely, but currants and gooseberries are very high in pectin. Raspberries, blackberries, not so much. Cherries, if they're sour cherries, very high in pectin. Strawberries, not so much. Apples, very high in pectin. Pears, not so much. Apricots and peaches, not so much. Plums have quite a lot. So it really depends on the fruit.
Right. I mean, have you ever done that where you pureed blueberries and put it in the refrigerator? I mean, it just turns into jello, blueberry jello.
Yeah, it kind of looks like like this. There was this old Monty Python sketch, the blancmange. I don't know. It was this giant pudding that like won at Wimbledon and ate people. It's like the blueberries congeal to form this solid. It's almost beautiful. It's got this jewel tone color to it and this sheen and yeah. Yeah, I actually do that on a open tart with like some goat cheese and then put the blueberries. Was that for the goat cheese?
Okay. That's okay.
I like goat cheese.
Just a disclaimer here: I do not promote goat cheese consumption.
Understood. Okay,
but that's okay. We're all friends here in the plant foraging world. And you give tours?
I do.
Tell me about those.
I never pick anything illegally in a city park, but I do take people on walks through Central Park, mostly in Central Park, sometimes at the New York Botanical Garden as well. They're foraging walks to educate people, to show people what is out there that they might be able to eat. And people will say, I've got that all over my yard. I never knew I could eat that.
Right.
And you know, hopefully they go home and then actually do something about
speaking
it.
Speaking of which, bamboo. Can we just have a bamboo moment? My brother's got, like, an infestation of bamboo in his backyard, and I'm thinking dinner, lunch, breakfast, over and over.
In the spring, though. See, that's the thing. It's in the right season. If you went out there now, bamboo would be not delicious. But if you go out in the spring when the shoots are just like 6 to 8 inches tall, that's when you cut them
down. Tender bamboo shoots.
Yeah. And very, very easy to prepare. You just need boiling water.
Wow. Oh, okay. Now, did you ever have a bad experience foraging?
You mean like a puking my guts out experience?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it with?
Evening primrose root, which many people eat with no trouble whatsoever. I have no food allergies that I know of. Maybe I have to try it again, and I will try it again, despite the fact that I really did puke my guts out. But I'll try it again because I want to know if it was an aberration or if it just really doesn't agree with me.
It could have been something.
Or maybe I prepared it wrong, although I highly doubt that, but it's possible.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it happened, so there's... I like to think that when we have a very vital body, if something goes in that the body doesn't like, it will get rid of it immediately.
Yes.
And that's important.
I think it is.
And a lot of people, their bodies are not vital because their bodies have given up because they keep filling it up with processed food and too much animal food and a lot of junk, and the body gives up. But I will confess that there are times when I do... is there a technical term for vomiting? I don't know.
Puking your guts out. That's the technical. I'm sorry. That is the technical term.
But it happens from time to time, and I never know what it is. All I know is I thank my body for knowing.
To get rid
of
that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's over, just like that. Mm-hmm. And that's a vital body.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, let's not end on that note. Let's.
I don't know if I'm.
Yes.
I'm speaking at the New York Public Library next Tuesday.
Ooh, where is which one?
At the Mid-Manhattan branch at 6:30, and it's free. So if anybody.
Free is good.
Yes, free is good. And I'll be serving foraged cookies at the end. So if anybody,
cookies.
Yeah.
Very good. And you'll have some books there, maybe?
I will have books, and I'll be showing pictures of a lot of these plants, so maybe people will be able to say, I grow that. I didn't know I could eat it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I highly recommend that, and I think it should be fun. How long does it last?
It's an hour, 6:30 to 7:30, and then I'll stick around and take questions,
okay,
of course.
Okay, great. Well, Ellen, thank you very much for joining me here. This has been fun, and I'm just going to go start, well, maybe soon, foraging.
Do it.
Very
do
soon.
It.
I'm going to step outside beyond my terrace.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break now. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Stay with me, and we will be right back with Paul Waldow talking about animal studies.